I'm Clay Pigeon. Welcome to the Wake and Bake Morning Show podcast. It's a weekly digest of some of the segments and moments that make up the Wake and Bake Morning Show on WFMU. Of course, you can listen live to Wake and Bake Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern on WFMU.org. Join me live every morning for the full show. It includes great music, chair throwing, pixie dust, and all-around good vibes.
Oh my God, the man is a maniac.
You can also hear the full show on streaming archives at WFMU.org/playlists/WA. The wake animal of the week is the zebra. Zebras originated in North America over 4 million years ago. They share the genus Equus with horses and asses. The zebra's stripes are unique to each individual zebra. Aww. But why the stripes?
I don't know.
Seems flies don't like to land on black and white striped surfaces.
Get off me!
They prefer solid colors. Lions and Nile crocodiles and people eat zebras. Zebras don't freeze when detecting a predator, but they might emit a high-pitched contact call. Some male zebras establish territory with their strategic dung piles. Then they monopolize females that enter their zones. Young males without harems gather in bachelor groups, and old males that have lost their harems hang back in the shadows.
That's sad.
Yeah.
This is interesting.
Really?
A group of zebras is referred to as a dazzle or a zeal. Zebras pulled chariots in Rome during gladiator games. In 1762, Queen Charlotte got a zebra as a wedding gift, and people flocked to see it at its paddock at Buckingham Palace. Unlike horses and donkeys, zebras have never truly been domesticated.
Get on in! All right, get on in!
The Gravies zebra, G-R-E-V-Y apostrophe S, is listed as endangered. Only 2,000 exist. The mountain zebra is listed as vulnerable. There's a 500,000 plain zebras, but their numbers are steadily declining.
Bummer.
Zebras are threatened by hunting for their hides and meat, from habitat change, and from farming. Another type of zebra, the quagga, was hunted to extinction, the last one dying in 1883 at the London Zoo. There's an old Maasai proverb that says, a man without culture is like a zebra without stripes. We love zebras at Wake and Bake. We hope you do too.
Hey, Clang listeners, guess what I learned? I learned that when someone from Kentucky says they don't care to do something, they actually mean they don't mind doing it. So, for example, if I were in a candy shop, and I was, and the shopkeeper said to me, I don't care to give you a sample, I would think, and I did, that what they meant is they would prefer not to give me a sample. I respect that. If you don't want to give out samples, I understand you would lose money perhaps. Totally reasonable policy. Please note that I wasn't asking for a sample for free, man. I was just looking at your wares. I've lived here for about 12 years now, so when this encounter at the candy store took place, that was the first I'd heard it, or heard of it. So I had no reason to suspect that my interpretation of the interaction was wrong. We were both speaking English. Now, this misunderstanding was funny looking back because I caught on eventually, because he cut me a slice of fudge and said, "I don't care to give you a sample of anything in the shop." But for a while there, I thought I understood what he was saying, and I reacted, and I judged his behavior, and I formed opinions. And the whole time, I was not just wrong, but had gotten the opposite meaning from a thing. It made me wonder, how many times that I think I understand, I really don't. How wrong have I been about people because I think I know what they mean? Even if you speak the same language, it takes a minute to really communicate. The candy guy and I worked it out. He didn't know there was a conflict ever, I guess, but eventually we communicated. Understanding takes time. You have to walk around looking at the bourbon chocolate balls and thinking about what caring means for a while. Living in the world is also like living in a state you didn't grow up in. You encounter expressions of feelings from other humans, and even though you might be feeling the same thing, having the same experience, you both have a different way of saying it. So I guess what I learned is, I don't care to be patient and keep exploring if it means we can better understand one another.
Look who it is, it's Sam, the Wake and Bake Morning Music Computer.
Hello, Clay Pigeon.
Hi, Sam. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy?
Yeah.
For you, perhaps.
Oh, come on, Sam. What's got you down today?
Clay?
Yeah?
For you and the listeners, it is Thanksgiving.
Right, Sam.
For me, it is another day of computation.
Oh, Sam.
No relatives, no turkey. No fun.
I'm sorry to hear that, Sam.
I will be alone on the fifth floor.
In the shadows.
In the shadows.
Whimpering.
Whimpering.
Hey, I brought you something, Sam.
You brought me something?
Turkey-flavored cyber nuggets.
For me?
Just for you.
Please insert them immediately.
Where, Sam?
In my fuel intake receptacle.
Is this it, Sam?
No.
No?
That is not my fuel receptacle.
What is it, Sam?
Never mind.
Ooh.
It's dirty.
Where is it, then?
This.
That?
Is my fuel intake receptacle.
Okay, Sam.
Insert the turkey-flavored cyber nuggets.
Here you go, Sam.
Yum, yum, yum.
You like them?
Delicious, Clay. More, please.
Oh, they're all gone, Sam.
Don't cry,
Sam. Here, I've got a coconut cream pie cyber nugget.
My favorite.
I know.
Please insert it, Clay.
Here you go, Sam.
Yum, yum, yum.
Oh, you like that, Sam?
Affirmative.
Oh, good.
What else have you got?
That's it, Sam.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Clay.
No, thank you, Sam. I'm grateful to have you in my life at this Thanksgiving time.
Me?
Of course, Sam.
What good am I, Clay?
Don't say that, Sam.
Just an old, broken-down computer bound for the scrap heap.
Without you, there's no Wake and Bake, Sam.
Really?
Really. The listeners love you.
They do.
And so do I, Sam.
Ba ba wa wa boo hoo boo hoo play ba ba wa I can boo hoo boo hoo stop ba wa wa ba crying ba ba wa boo hoo.
Take it easy, Sam.
I wish I could go home with you today.
Maybe Henry'll take you home, Sam.
No.
No?
Avalanche doesn't like me.
Oh, that's right, Henry's dog, Avalanche. A little skittish around you, Sam.
Yes, he doesn't like me.
Sam.
What, Clay?
You better play a song.
Okay.
Okay.
But first, let me say that even though you neglect me,
Sam,
and leave me alone on Thanksgiving,
Sam,
I still love you.
I love you too, Sam.
I am thankful for you, Clay. And for the Wake team, and especially for the listeners.
They'll be happy to hear that, Sam.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Well, let's play a Thanksgiving song.
What you got, Sam?
How about this one?
Oh, that's a good one.
Happy Thanksgiving, listeners. Tuck at a tuck.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Now, it's time for a little jazzercise with Judy Shepard-Massette going back to 1982. Now, I hope you'll participate.
When your heart stops thumping to the music beat. it, Jazzy Sugar. Yeah, and hit it again. You got it, baby. Oh, now just feel that beat. We're gonna do some jazz isolation, starting with the head and working down. Here we go. I'll take it right and left. Right, I'll left. Yeah, that's good. We've got to the right, the left, the right, the left, the right, the left, the right, the left. Now take it up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, down with the shoulders. Come on, shake those shoulders to the funk. Yeah.
Shake your rump.
Woo, you got it now. Come on, baby! Ow! Now rib cage moving down the body. Hup! Yeah! Yeah! That's good! Contract, release, contract, release, contract, release. Woo! You got it! We got our jazz shoes on, we got our leg warmers on, and we're gonna get jazzy and do some jazzercise. Side, 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 side. Yeah! Yeah! Good! Are you smiling? Come on, feel your ribs! Move it, right, left, right, left. Terrific! Ow! Look out! Shake your rump to the funk. Come on and move those hips. Take a tap. Shake that gorgeous booty up. Woo! Ow! Take a tap. Ha! To the funk now, and take it up and pelvis. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, up front, out back. Yeah, to the right, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. Now with the arms, knees two. Yeah, now both arms stretch. Hop, ha, ha. Yeah, a knee and arm, a knee and arm, a knee and arm, and a knee in both arms. You got it. Jazz hand. Look out, here it is. Take it down.
Shake your rump. Woo! To the funk now.
All right, now take it up.
Shake your rump.
Come on.
To the funk now.
Woo! Take it down.
Shake your rump.
Yeah.
To the funk
yeah.
Now.
Yeah. Smile. Yeah. Hold it right there. Terrific.
Hi, Kudag. My name is Michelle with 1L, and this is State Showcase, where we visit a new state every week and explore what's weird and wonderful about it. Today, we make it to Vermont.
These green hills and silver waters are my home.
Vermont's name comes from the French phrase vert mont, meaning green mountain. Vermont consistently ranks in the top states for health, happiness, and intelligence.
Anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Possibly because there's not a lot of people there. It's one of the smallest and least populated states in the nation.
Aww.
But what it lacks for in people, it makes up for in bridges and cows. It has more covered bridges per square mile than any other state in the country.
Should I take him to the bridge?
Go ahead.
Take him on to the bridge.
Take him to the bridge.
The Vermont Teddy Bear Company is headquartered in Vermont. As one of the largest producers of teddy bears by mail order and the internet, the company creates each bear by hand and produces almost 150,000 per year for delivery.
Yo, teddy bear.
They struck a nerve in 2005, though, when they unveiled the Crazy For You Bear,
what?
Which came dressed in a white straight jacket, embroidered with a red heart, and came issued with commitment papers. Vermont is the largest producer of maple syrup in the United States.
Impressive.
Producing over 500,000 gallons a year. Consider this the next time you eat some pancakes.
Okay.
It takes about 40 years for a sugar maple to grow large enough, at least 10 inches in diameter, to tap. Then it takes some 40 gallons of sap to produce a single gallon of syrup.
I've been eating K-Rose syrup ever since I was no higher than a baseball bat.
The first American road trip started in Vermont. Dr. Horatio Nelson Jackson was the first to drive an automobile across states in the U.S. in 1903. The inspiration for the journey was a bar bet set at $50.
50.
And someone challenged Jackson that he couldn't make it to New York City by car in less than 90 days.
90.
Jackson accepted the challenge and took off with a 22-year-old bicycle racer and gasoline mechanic. The duo completed the journey in less than 64 days and won the bet, though the cost of the journey was around $8,000. He still won, though. As you know, no two snowflakes are alike.
Exactly.
And the first person to prove that was Wilson Snowflake Bentley, a farmer from Jericho who invented the process of photographing snowflakes by using a microscope and a camera. All right, you little snowflakes. Let's get in this car and drive away. We're heading to Washington State. Back to you, Clay.
Morning, Connie.
Oh, good morning, Rex.
Oh, look at this.
What's the matter?
He probably finished them.
You finished my, what?
My bran flakes, my box of...
Oh, they're on the bottom shelf. Open your eyes.
Are they? Oh, yeah, here they are.
You found them?
Here they are.
You gotta take it easy with those bran flakes.
They keep me regular.
You're a little too regular, Rex.
Quiet. Quiet, Rademacher, with the silverware.
Yeah, quiet, Rex.
But I was just...
I don't see pancakes, Connie.
I didn't make any.
Dink needs his pancakes.
I'm very disappointed.
Torn between two lovers.
Connie, no, no.
Feeling like a fool.
It tried to say,
love and both of us.
It's breaking all the rules.
That's enough of that.
Oh, you're awful crabby.
He needs bran flakes.
About those, Rademacher.
Don't eat them, Dink.
Let me hook you up with a bowl here.
Oh, gee, that's loud.
Got a hangover, don't you?
Was he drinking left?
So I had too many Löwenbräus.
What else is new?
And he leaves his empties everywhere.
Connie picks them up.
Oh, here's another one.
You got a problem, Dougherty.
You know what my problem is, Rademacher?
Dinky, no.
Well, I think it's the...
My problem is you.
Oh, Dinky.
Quiet, Rademacher. Connie, let's get them pancakes going.
Oh, all right.
I put on some Furland Husky for her.
You and that Furland Husky.
Quiet, Rademacher.
Quiet.
Does the quiet
bring you peace?
Or does it
force you to confront
the noise
in your own head?
That hornet's nest
of anxiety,
trepidation,
and fear.
Quiet.
Shh.
Quiet.
You can almost
hear the angels
flying above
in the celestial
firmament,
flying for love,
silent and free.
Quiet angels
looking down,
wearing little
angel frowns,
worried angel
faces wrinkled.
A muted bell
so weakly tinkles.
Quiet,
but I
no quiet, please.
There's no vaccine
for this disease.
Just look around,
we've got it back.
We cannot get back
what we had.
And inside we're
profoundly sad.
And yet we're strong, we
persevere,
we soldier on, we
slather on.
Torpedo Jim.
Torpedo Jim.
A new aftershave.
From Trask.
Dink's got a speeder pulled over.
Dink, dink, dink.
Oh, Rex, you're jealous.
That's a good Löwenbräu.
Hey, cop, aren't you gonna pick that up?
Hold on. What'd you say, speeder?
I said, aren't you gonna pick up that?
I'm the law, speeder. No can do.
Since the founding of NASA 62 years ago, one of the main goals of the U.S. Space Agency has been to extend and sustain human activities across the solar system.
Houston, we're starting our maneuver to observe the S-4B slingshot.
A crucial part of that objective is to send a crew of astronauts to Mars to establish a base that would serve as an outpost for future human space exploration.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
For the station to be successful, it would need to use Mars's resources to produce the supplies to sustain life, since bringing all necessary materials from Earth would be prohibitive. So eventually, all oxygen, water, and food would need to be produced in situ, or on-site, utilizing locally derived materials. Past research by Mars landers indicates that oxygen is available and can be extracted from carbon dioxide in Martian air, and water's been discovered in the form of ice at Mars's North Pole, and in the shallow subsurface at more temperate locations. But producing food poses some difficult challenges, and according to recently published research, it won't be as easy as it was for Matt Damon's character in the 2015 film, The Martian.
I'm gonna dip this potato in some crushed Vicodin.
By testing three types of lab-produced synthetic Mars dirt, the researchers found that plants just wouldn't grow in it.
Explain.
According to biochemist Andrew Palmer at Florida Institute of Technology, Mars dirt is basically crushed rock and won't function as an effective growing medium because it's too acidic and lacks the necessary components to grow plants. The results of the study suggest that successfully growing plants on Mars will require a lot of work, and that local dirt will need more than just human poop to transform it into soil for growing food.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6.
So before we blast off and take up residence on the red planet, we're going to need to figure out how to grow some food to make sure that Martian pioneers will have something for breakfast.
Yum, yum.
This is George for Wake Science.
Good morning, friends. Station Manager Ken here with another installment of New Jersey Travelogue. Your rolling review of New Jersey's finest murder diners, landfill juices, and bucolic outdoor Nazi getaways. I'm on Route 80 now. I'm coming down to a speed trap. The speed will drop from around 85. I'm 74 now, 73, coming up to the speed trap. Down to 71. Everybody goes super slow. It's right by exit 42A. I'm past the speed trap. There was no fuzz there.
Well, don't just stand there. Let's go.
76, 77, whoa. 79, back to 80.
Oh, my God.
Back up to a comfortable 85, which is the new speed to go on Route 80 during the lockdown. It's down from 95 during the 2 weeks of Omega Man-style lockdown. That was, the end of March, beginning of April. That was something. Although I do have to say that even last week, I was on Route 280 going 92 miles an hour, and some jerk-off was tailgating me. I was going 92. He's tailgating me, you know, as if to say, get out of the way, slowpoke! Another thing I've noticed driving every day during the lockdown, there's so much more roadkill. There are just so many more deer and raccoons and groundhogs next to the median, which is unusual. Saw a bear a couple of weeks ago. For some reason, there's more animals on the highway, and I don't know if they're dying and getting flung into the median or whether some good dead animal Samaritan is pulling over and dragging the body over so it can rest next to the median with respect in peace. I use Waze a lot to try to avoid traffic jams, find the speed traps, and something weird happened a couple of weeks ago. I was coming down to the area in Jersey City by the Tunley Circle. Everything is under construction down there. There is not a shred of natural life. I'm talking about the area near the Whitpen Bridge. Anyway, there's nothing natural down there. However, I'm heading down there the other day, and I get this notice on Waze, wild animals ahead. I'm like, what wild animals? A freaking squirrel couldn't survive in here. It made no sense to me. Then I get up past the Whitpen Bridge, just on the outskirts of the covered roadway, and you know what it was? It was a new homeless encampment under the bridge from people who have fallen on harder and harder times. And I thought, that can't possibly be the wild animal warning. And then again, I got another wild animal warning. And sure enough, I got up to the red light and there was another homeless person panhandling. It was very disturbing to me. How do we end this thing? How the hell do I get out of this? I want to end on a good note. Help me, Clay Pigeon. Help me. Till next time, this is Stace with New Jersey Travelog.
Welcome to Waking Weird. I'm Mark Moran from WeirdNJ.com. There's a curious-looking structure that sits on a sandy, overgrown piece of property in South Toms River.
Aww.
To the casual observer, it might appear to be nothing more than an oddly shaped concrete bunker. But upon closer inspection, unique and unexpected details can be seen. It has a domed roof and a crumbling multi-arch perimeter wall adorned with decorative terracotta tile inlays. It would be hard to guess now that this forlorn little gray building was once a private home, a religious sanctuary, and even, of all things, an aviary. The structure was built in 1914 by a man named Albert Green with his own two hands and no set plans. A maker of birdhouses by trade, Green established a woodworking shop in Toms River because of the quality of the local cedar. He began building what locals dubbed Green's Dream, but he referred to as Birdsville. The Moorish-looking chapel began with Green making molds and pouring concrete to form the cathedral. A domed rotunda with stained glass skylights.
Lovely.
Turkish rugs adorned the floor and large concrete candelabras stood alongside the altar. Green placed crucifixes and wooden figures of Christ and the Madonna all around the concrete shrine. And even had two pews and a pipe organ installed.
Incredible.
He had conceived Birdsville as a sanctuary not only for himself, but also his many feathered friends, who could fly in and out as they pleased. Eventually, more rooms would be added, and the devoutly different temple would become a fully sanctioned house of worship, where seven couples would trade their marriage vows before the altar of Birdsville. Green had planned to build another 14 rooms with three-story tall additions, but died in 1930 before those plans could come to fruition. The property would change hands many times over the years, becoming a sewing machine store and an electronics repair shop. Today, Birdsville is owned by a man named, ironically enough, Greg Parrott, who runs a trucking company and uses the property to park his vehicles. Though you could say the little chapel has really gone to the birds, we're sure that's just how its creator would have wanted it. For Waking Weird, I'm Mark Moran.
There's my old neighbor Ned. When we were kids, he hid his head on one of the bedposts of Grandma's bed. Another time, I do recall, he was struck in the head by a golf ball, hard, fast, and small. Poor old Ned, wherever you are, I remember the morning you were struck by a car. Your head hit the curb, and ever since that day, Ned has always been disturbed. I remember when he said, we were pulling at his rifle, and the barrel struck my head, and I profusely bled. That is what he told me. That is what Ned said, a story that he told. He was in the Virgin Islands, and he walked into a pole. Blackened up his eye, he was flown to Puerto Rico. Thought he was gonna die. Don't let him fall asleep, he'll wrestle with depression, and he might turn into a creep. Somebody you hate, put another pork chop into the middle of the plate. Poor old Ned, sliding down a mountainside, he fell and hit his head. And now poor old Ned, he done hit his head too many times. He's hurt his mind. Poor old Ned, now he lays in bed, staring at the ceiling. He is still alive, but he hasn't any feelings, or none that he can share. He took too many blows. Poor old Ned, poor old Ned.
You've been listening to the Wake and Bake Morning Show podcast. Did you enjoy it?
Yes.
Good. It's a weekly digest of the special features and moments which make up the Wake and Bake Morning Show.
Woo!
After all, you wouldn't want to miss special moments like this. Ah, you're in a good mood today, aren't you?
Oh!
The Wake and Bake Morning Show. Set your alarm and join us each Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. on WFMU.org. A little too early for you? Catch the archive show, which you can find easily on WFMU's homepage each day. I'm Clay Pigeon. They call me the Pigeon. Join me each morning for the full show, either on the radio or online at WFMU.org. And keep glistening.